and sharp picture.
Intervju Radija Študent.
Poslušalstvo, dobrodošlo v etru Radija Študent. Danes je z nami Birgitta Jonsdottir, aktivistka in parlamentarka v Islandiji. V parlament je prišla z dvema različnima strankama, obe sta bili, kako bi rekel, zunani stranki, nefinancirani, nesistemski stranki, če ne tako temu rečem. Ena je bilo civilno gibanje, druga pa je piratska stranka, v kateri je še zdaj, oziroma v imenu katere je še zdaj parlamentarka. Intervju bo potekal v angleščini. So, Birgitta, welcome to the ITER.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here. I heard it's the best radio station in Slovenia.
Well, thank you. We like to think so. So what's the main reason why you visited Slovenia? Is that, no, they're just negotiating the Treaty of TISA. Could you talk about TISA? Why is it so problematic?
Well, first of all, the reason why I'm here is because I was invited to try to get attention to the sort of smaller parties that are not getting any attention in the, you know, in the, just before the elections. I think it's very important that we have equal accessibility for all parties to be able to represent what they're offering. But also, I have never been to Slovenia, and I have noticed in the short time I've been here how much we have in common. And one thing we have in common is TISA. I just heard about it like everybody else through this WikiLeaks leak. I've been trying to, I just want to say very quickly what it means from what I've seen. And it basically means that corporations will be given more power.
So just start at the beginning. So what is a TC? It's a treaty on the global scale and...
Yeah, so it's like 50 nations that are negotiating to hand over more power to corporations, basically, and or to the private sector. It is built on something called GATT, which is a previous treaty. The special thing about this one is it's done in complete secrecy. Before and after it's signed, nobody can see it for 5 years.
What's your take? Why so much secrecy?
Probably because it's bad for most people and really good for the elite. So it basically means that, from what I heard, is that, and I would very much, if I'm incorrect, to get somebody from these negotiations to correct me, but it is basically giving corporations the power to override, for example, local laws in Slovenia or in Iceland or any other country that are part of it. I'm trying to figure out who is the Icelandic representative. I think it is just a traditional bureaucrat. I will ask that person will be brought for a parliamentary committee so we can ask him. But the most important thing both for Slovenia and Iceland and any of the other nations is that we get to see it, parliamentarians at least, and that we get to make amendments to it if there is anything that is a threat to our sovereignty. Then also another thing, you know, Iceland is very much aware of the problematics of deregulations of the banking sector. And apparently one of the big chunks in it is to help deregulate the banking sector again. And we haven't really made a lot of amendments in Europe to the banking sector. So we need to know and we need to have transparency about this.
So the banking sector, they were introducing new regulations after the financial crisis. And now what we are seeing is that like top corporations and top financial lobbies are lobbying in secret in conjunction with our elected representatives to acknowledge this treaty that would be above all national law.
Yes. And it's really above the representatives, because if we don't get to see it and if we can't make amendments to it, we are the lawmakers, the parliamentarians are the lawmakers. If we are not to be given access to it, then we are blindly accepting a global treaty that we have no say in, and that is unconstitutional.
So this is a part of the process of globalization. So we all know that globalization is here, it will be here, but the process, how it is happening, what's your take on this? So should we get more electoral representability into this negotiation?
Well, first of all, these negotiations should be split up. So, you know, in the middle of the process, it should be brought openly into parliament so it can be debated what it means. And then before it is agreed on, each party, like each one of these 50 countries, the parliament should be able to take it into a committee process. And then, if needed, to make amendments, and it should be absolutely open for the general public to know what it is before it's agreed on it. And if it is unconstitutional, nations should have the ability to call for a referendum on it.
Iceland had an interesting experience with the liberalization of banks. What happens when you privatize banks and they have no accountability?
Oh my God, I mean, don't do it. So what basically happened was 5 years prior to the grand financial collapse, Iceland was one of the worst countries to be hit. Because when we privatized the banks, obviously it was supposed to be really professional and we were supposed to have control over it and wanted to get some foreign capital where there was some experience to counterbalance the Icelandic one. But in the end, it just, you know, all the sort of good standards were swept away and the banks were basically handed over to the people that were favorable to, you know, each of the parties. So like three banks, three different parties were sort of associated with them. And then we found out in the, we did a massive report on what went wrong, you know, prior to the collapse. And it was proven that they never put any money into Icelandic society. They never really paid for the banks. They just lent each other for it. So one bank lent the other for down payment, but it was never any fresh money into the system. So it was a complete scam of the worst kind. Then they figured out how to hack into the, because we are not a part of EU, but we are part of the European Economic Area. That means that 80% of our laws are European Union laws, including the banking laws. And they found out how they could actually abuse the laws to expand into Europe. So all of a sudden, the banks grew like 6 times our GDP. So when they collapsed, we went into a hole. The banks today, it's a gambling scam. So, you know, and I heard that you banned online gambling, yet you allow, or, you know, with bets and stuff like that.
Well, or, you know, like the director of our systemic bank, the Nova Ljubljanska Banka, he's a professional gambler. And he's quite open to admit that. You know.
Yeah, but the biggest gambling, you know, the biggest casino you can go into is a bank.
It was interesting when you pointed out that like three main political parties divided their shares in the banks, because in Slovenia we always tend to think that we are having like this Balkan mentality, you know, we're gonna go into the European Union and everything is gonna be like in Austria or something. Do you think that Iceland is having a Balkan mentality?
Or? Absolutely. Well, it's either that or I often call Iceland Grand Sicily. So because of nepotism, and you know, you are also a nation of relatively few people like us, and nepotism is a massive problem. And it's very hard, for example, for whistleblowers or people to report on corruption within the system. That's why that's one of my most difficult challenges, is to find how to make favorable laws to encourage whistleblowing so that people can actually get a job again if they do it openly. And we are very similar. We are both Grand Sicilies.
Do you think, could you give us an opinion, was Iceland more conservative in this, in the nice sense, in being more restrictive in its laws before it joined the trend of harmonizing its lawmaking with the European Union?
I can't really say so, because we, of course, are a relatively new democracy, and we basically copy-pasted a lot of the Scandinavian legislation. So yes, it was more conservative in a positive way, and more aching to sort of the best possible socialism you can find. Sort of many of our laws are Swedish, were based on a Swedish legal frame. But that has all been sort of eroding away. Even Sweden, the haven of socialism, is really right-wing now. So I guess it's a trend that's been happening all over. We were sort of the last countries to fall, you know, in Scandinavia. And it is a part of this transformative political process that's now happening in the world. It became really right-wing, really sort of neoconservative everywhere. You know, it's like just, they even call themselves left. You know, social democrats claim they're left, but they are more right than some of the right-wing parties. So it calls for a different, actually, thought when you look at the political landscape.
So... Do you have like a represent? We have like three main ideologies, politically speaking. We have socialists, liberals, and conservatives. Do you have all the spectrum covered in the Scandinavian parliament?
Yeah, in Iceland we have a new also element, which is the Pirate Party, which is we don't define ourselves left or right. Like we're very libertarian in many senses, where we want, you know, less regulations on individuals and more regulations on corporations. I don't know where that would fall in categories. It's both left and right. So we sort of do a similar experiment like we did with when I created the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative, which is to cherry pick all the best laws in the world in order to create a safe haven for freedom of information, expression and speech. And we can also do that with when we create political movements. I am not personally in favor of parties. I think they become like cults. They become like Church of Scientology if you're not careful. But the problem that we are faced with in the political spectrum is that the old generation is very stuck in this sort of Cold War mentality, whereas a new generation of people are coming forward that, you know, live in a globalized world, you know, where the people that are raised up online, and we just see and experience things very differently than, you know, our, you know, and even people my age are not, I lived on the internet so much longer than most people from my generation. So I am fortunate enough to be able to be a part of this sort of the internet movement of hacktivists, you know, activism that we, where we use the same methods as activists in the physical world to bring forward social change. And I personally don't think that there is any one ideology that's better or worse than the other. It is really us versus the 1%. And those that are in favor of the 1% and work for them are just like the people that used to work for the colonists when we were colonized in Iceland. They were usually the ones that were the worst to Icelanders, but not the people that were our colonists.
How would you picture the structure of the government, or not, maybe better say the structure of, you know, exploitation? You know, who is on the top?
Well, most democracies are fake, because the word means the rule of the people, and it is not the rule of the people to only be able to vote every 4 years and then think, you know, we are free to do whatever we want to. Because living in a democracy, the rule of the people means that we have to be engaged. It is work to live in a free society. So we have handed over our power to people that are hungry for power and thrive on power. There's a lot of corruption there, so you don't know if it's the corporations that rule or with the help of some, you know, power-hungry people or not. I mean, I think it's sort of akin to corporocracy or fascism, and that is why I want to and encourage that we would show this film Fascism Inc., made by activists from Greece. It's going to be shown in Kino. What is the name of
it?
Yeah, tonight. So it's eye-opening film because it shows how closely knitted capitalism and fascism is.
You are an avid supporter of WikiLeaks. Do you think that WikiLeaks is a good initiative so that to bring the decision-making process that is happening in shady backrooms back into the, you know, into the eyes of the public?
Absolutely. I was actually a WikiLeaks volunteer during the time when the biggest leak in human history was coming in, the Bradley Manning stuff, the diplomatic cables, collateral murder, and Iraq and Afghan warlocks. And for me, the reason why I made the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative is to legalize the functionality of WikiLeaks so that information that should be in the public domain, the process of handing it over to the public is completely legal and safe for the source, and so that journalists can have an access to information that needs to be sort of brought into the public domain so people understand it. Because if you read the, when I was reading through the all these logs that were coming in, it was so much in code. You had to understand military language, and so we had to sort of decode it. And The Guardian did an excellent job of that. But and Julian Assange did also. He had done a lot of pre-work before it was released to The Guardian. So yeah, we absolutely need to have societies where it is safe to speak truth to power. And also another very important element, which I'm an avid supporter of, and it's very interesting to follow how people are starting to demand more power. They're wanting to claim their power. And the word e-democracy and direct democracy, 10 years ago, nobody was speaking about it. Now it's really in, and there's a lot of citizens' initiatives. Even here in Slovenia, there are lots of citizen initiatives to try to get people to be more involved. And that, for me, is a very positive development. And even if it feels at times that we are powerless, you know, against all these huge multinationals and these corrupt politicians, we are not, you know. And if we can legalize direct democracy and give these tools to people, and like, for example, the budget, you know, you should, when you pay taxes, you should have something to say about where it goes. That is very easily achievable. There are so many things people can demand, and what people need to do here and everywhere else is to analyze and beg for answers to what are the most important things to do to democratize this country or any other country that pretends to be a democracy.
You were also a proponent of this legislation in Iceland to make Iceland a safe haven for whistleblowers. How successful were you at that? And
well, that's the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative. So I managed to get it. I actually, it was a miracle how I got it through the parliament. I still don't know really what happened.
So it went through. It's legalized now.
No, we're working on the law. So I made a parliamentary proposal where we sort of cherry-picked all the best laws that had functioned for WikiLeaks and journalists had recommended in Europe, because journalistic freedom is very bad in Europe after all the anti-terrorist laws. And then, you know, I made a proposal where I tasked the government to change these or make new laws for these 10 different categories. You can have a look at it on our website, immi.is. And so I got it through. Usually this sort of stuff dies in committees. Got it through. Everybody agreed on it in the parliament. It was like a green wall. And then it's being worked on by a steering group in the ministry. So like the previous government was working on it and the current government. I'm using the Pirate Party to work. We have three representatives in the Icelandic parliament, including me, and we are speeding up the process because they're so slow in the ministry. That's what happens when you get lots of bureaucrats doing something. I'm working currently on getting rid of data retention. And I managed to stop, actually. I didn't know that I actually was responsible that it was not adopted within the European Economic Area, the data retention bill, because I was in the committee in the Icelandic Parliament that I encouraged them, like, or told them what it was, and we decided not to discuss it and ratify it. So Liechtenstein and Norway just decided to do it on their own.
What would it mean?
Well, we already have really bad data retention laws, and the reason why I did not want to agree on it on a European economic area or European level was it would be very difficult to turn it back if you were a part of an international treaty. So we're working on now changing the local law because the EU court ruled against data retention. So I've managed to get my entire committee in the parliament, it's a cross-political committee, to agree on getting rid of it when we come together in the fall. So I'm preparing that, it's nearly ready. So it's gonna run through the parliament.
What would be your conclusion? Because now we heard again that data retention is also part of an international treaty. And what can we conclude from this? Are the real politics nowadays happening on the international, intergovernmental, intercorporate level? Or is it still on the local level where you vote for your local representatives?
It's increasingly moving into the sort of the international level, and that's why we need to make, if we want to have any say, we have to make either like the very broken UN stronger, but we can set local examples. Like that's why I did the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative. It was supposed to inspire others, and it is tackling the global reality we live in. So it is sort of a nice global legal hack.
So basically, we need a world government with a functioning system of, you know, like World Bank that's not in the interest of the corporations. And
well, we need to have more direct influence. Unfortunately, it was tried with this citizens' initiative with the EU, and the Commission has not ratified it in regard to that water should not be a private commodity. So I don't know, we need to both. It's very dangerous when we lose complete faith in our democratic system because it's messed up. We need to at least then start to develop alternatives locally and be strong locally and have some sovereignty. And, you know, if we're really weak at home, we can't be strong abroad, if you know what I mean. So people need to, and there is no easy solution to this. This requires a lot of brain power, a lot of work. We need to get more philosophers. We need to get more activists engaged in working together. This is very important. We need to be organized. We need to use the organizational platform the right wing and the corporations use in order to mobilize and organize ourselves. We have to stop being so divided.
So we have to use like the techniques that work. Those are the techniques that are used in the corporate world. On the other hand, but what's the criteria upon which we can socialize, get together? You know, we had the dream of socialism like for the past 200 years. They say it ended. It's the end of the history, they said. What we have now? Where should we coordinate?
I encourage people to read Chomsky's take on anarchism. I discovered that I was a Chomsky anarchist. I didn't know that until recently. And we need to build stronger communities, cooperative culture. We need to develop that. There are many new tools we can use, like Bitcoin is a perfect bartering tool. And it's not traceable how you, you know, what you're trading with. And we should ever, there is no privacy at all. So we have to be innovative on how we reclaim our cultures. And we do that in small cells. We do not do it, you know, you don't conquer the world before you conquer yourself. So, I mean, all revolutions start in our own heart, in our own backyard. And yeah.
Well, that was Birgitta Jonsdottir. Bio je to intervju z predstavnico Piratske stranke v islandskem parlamentu. This parliament, Icelandic, I heard it's the oldest parliament in the world or something.
Well, it's sort of yes and no. So it was like founded during Viking times. And then, of course, we were, you know, a colony of Denmark and Norway, so it did have some serious gaps in between. So, we're old and young, and we behave very much like a young democracy.
Okay. No torej, drago poslušalstvo, to je bila Birgita Jonstotter. Veselilo me je, da ste bili z nami. Želim vam lep dan še naprej in seveda razmislite o tem, kar je bilo povedano. Lep pozdrav.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that was quick.
Yeah, time flies.
Intervju Radija Študent. Pizdur.